There are worlds beyond worlds. Cold, hot, light, dark, watery, and earthen. They all share one basic need. A need for heroes. Elminster Almar.
He has scoured the realms and unearthed all manuscripts. Unfurled every scroll. Studied the manifestos. Unlatched every grimoire across the scape. He has cracked every tome. He is Vitiligo. And this is Cracking the Tome.
Yes! Welcome to the third episode of Cracking the Tome. Thank you so much for coming back and being a part of this with me. Today's episode is about Dungeons & Dragons. I am anything but a purist on this subject. In fact, I really knew close to nothing before Baldur's Gate 3. I started playing that like everybody else did and got persuaded of sorts to start getting back into tabletop, and my role in tabletop is, as you guessed, the DM. I had ran campaigns before, but that was through the Dragon Age tabletop, and I'd never really touched this universe. So all of this is fairly new to me in the past year. The campaign I chose to do was Tyranny of Dragons, and for those of you that are familiar with Tyranny of Dragons, it is absolutely the wrong choice for a first-time DM. DMs have to do a lot of work in general, and this was significantly more than normal, apparently. And what made it even more difficult is that I didn't really understand the universe very much. Over the past year, it's gotten quite a lot easier, but I'm still kind of lost in some areas when it comes to the lore. So that's what brings me to doing D&D right now. And right now, I gotta tell you, this is going to be very biblical of an episode. It's going to be very much Silmarillion-like, if you have read that. A lot of names being thrown around, a lot of quips, a lot of little facts here and there. I'll try to keep the flow going the best I can. Also, a lot of differing knowledge in different parts of the wiki and other information sources. So I'm going to try to give you the best, most straightforward version that I can get out of the information that I'm receiving. So, purists, please don't get too mad at me. So, yeah, if you like the Silmarillion, you're in for a hell of an episode. So, without further ado, let's get cracking. So, D&D takes place in the Forgotten Realms. These are called the Forgotten Realms because they are the realms that Earth has forgotten about. Earth is a realm itself in the material plane. It used to be closely connected with the other realms, but over time they grew apart and Earth has since forgotten they exist. Ages ago, there used to be contact and traversing between Earth's realm and the realms of D&D, just as common as there is between the rest of them in modern D&D. Earth is now isolated away from all the other realms. Only in legend and folktale are they referred and remembered. Which, I really like this because it adds to the immersion of D&D. Like, they're out there, you know, kind of like Star Wars, where long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, like, it's out there, you know? So many realms exist within a plane. Earth, for one, is part of the material plane. A plane refers to a distinct, often mystical or magical dimension of existence. While a realm is smaller, more specific region or domain within a plane, often with unique characteristics or rules. So think of realms like states within a country. And think of the countries as different universes altogether. So D&D resides in the multiverse, but not in a multiverse way that there's a version out there of you that's fit, happy, and not in debt, but more along the lines of there are different rules for life, death, geography, magic, gravity, and so on in these different planes. There are three main types of planes: material, the one we know and that the Earth is in, the inner planes, which are elemental and kind of speak for themselves, and the outer planes, which is basically afterlives and planes of mortality, where you go when you die. There's technically an infinite amount of planes within these categories, but the official world cosmology tree has an official 26 different planes. All of these planes are infinite, just like our universe, allegedly. And there are countless different realms inside of these planes, to varying degrees for each plane. Which makes it very easy to understand how there's so many homebrew worlds you can just throw in there and it makes sense. As stated before, intraplanar traveling between planes, happens very often in the D&D universe. It is done through the means of portals, conduits, or magical gates. It can also be done through planar pathways, which are geographical in essence and the most stable among all variations. So, very typical fantasy means on how they connect. The main plane that D&D takes place on is called the Prime Material Plane. The Earth resides in the Terran Material Plane. There are a few other material planes, but they have less prominence or credibility. You might ask yourself, well, where'd this all come from? Don't worry, I got your answer. And that is Ao. Ao is the one who created the multiverse. He is more or less D&D's god. The almighty of almighties. He is the one that oversees and controls all of the other gods. He started it with raw materials of the phlogiston. The phlogiston is a highly flammable, rainbow-colored fluid that fills everything, basically. It is the prime material from which everything was kind of made from. Other common terms for it are the flow or rainbow ocean. I kind of like rainbow ocean. It sounds happy. In the process of creating the material planes, the leftover residue formed what is now known as the astral plane, or the astral sea. Selune, the goddess of light, and Shar, the goddess of darkness, materialized from this residue. Along with the creation of the prime material plane, he created realm space. Realm space is the sun system that the main world of D&D is in. It contains 8 planets, their moons, asteroids, comets, nebulae. In fact, I hear there's some debate if there's actually a 9th planet, but overall, it's very much like our own system. Space in this sun system is called wild space, and all of this is contained in a giant crystal sphere that floats around in the phlogiston, you know, just like every other sun system is. So realm space is a realm inside the prime material plane. And the third rock from the sun in realm space is called Toril. Toril is the name of the world that a large majority of D&D takes place in. It is the D&D world. For those that have played Baldur's Gate 3 and nothing else, the Sword Coast is where Baldur's Gate is. And the Sword Coast is on Faerun, the continent. And Faerun is a continent on Toril, just to make sure everybody's following. And it is very similar to Earth in a lot of ways. 24 hours in a day, 365 days a year, humans are the race of origin here, 4,000 mile radius, you know, very, very Earth-like. These worlds like Toril that were created by Ao in the multiverse contained no life but were still coveted by the primordials. No, not like the Halo primordials. These primordials were very powerful elemental creatures which, as far as I know, have always existed, which I believe is kind of in the name. Selune and Shar defended the worlds in realm space from the primordials as they were beings of entropy and it was their nature to destroy and consume. At this time, Toril has been seeded with life. It was just one giant ocean and this is called the Blue Age. This began what is known as the Dawn War. There's a lot of other theories of how this war started, but we're going to stick with this one as it seems the least complex and easy to wrap my tiny monkey brain around. This war was on a cosmic scale, spanning across multiple planes of reality. This conflict in turn created a lot of gods or brought others in that were already in other dimensions to help with the conflict. There's a lot of legends or different theories of how this happened in this time phase, so please bear with me if you hear something else somewhere else. I'm doing my best. This took place mostly on the Astral Sea, but the biggest battle took place in the Abyss. The Abyss is an infinite plane where demons were created. In D&D, demons and devils are completely different things from different planes. They are actually archenemies of each other as well. The Abyss is a violent, malevolent place where the strong survived on the backs of the weak. The weak conspired to overthrow the strong. Alliances only lasted while convenient, and the landscape itself tortured the mind and body of all who dared to pass. The Primordials had demons and titans fighting along with them, and the gods had angelic armies, dragons, and mortals. I honestly couldn't find what mortals were alive at this time or what were helping them, but it's what the wiki said, so I threw that in there. The Primordials themselves were more powerful, and got more powerful by heading to the Shadowfell, also known as the Plane of Shadow, to start consuming souls to increase their powers. At this point, the god of dragons, Io, or otherwise known as Asgarath, intervened and led the dragons against the Primordials. Io himself slayed many Primordials, but fell against a particularly strong one that split him in half with a giant adamantine axe. From his two halves, the dragon gods Tiamat and Bahamut were born, good and evil. Actually, evil and good. Tiamat is bad, Bahamut's good. Eons passed as the Dawn War raged on. The son of Realm Space was eventually devoured by a primordial named Dendar the Night Serpent. This is what ends the Blue Age and now becomes the Shadow Epoch. The gods were finally able to do an all-out attack against the primordials in the Shadow Realm. This prevented them from eating all the souls and getting as strong as they wanted to, which would have probably been unstoppable by the gods. While that happened, Bahamut's allies crafted something called the Rod of Law. This helped tilt the scales against the demon armies, which sent them retreating back to the Abyssal Plane. With these two defeats, the Primordials ended up retreating as well and being defeated. A new sun was created, and the once frozen oceans thawed. This puts a final capstone on the Dawn War and ends the Age of the Shadow Epic. A new age begins, and it's called the Days of Thunder. The Days of Thunder start at -35,000 DR, which is Dale Reckoning, as well as this is the beginning of time recording in Toril, which I'm just going to switch to BC instead of negative DR, as it is much more fluid and everybody will still know what I'm talking about. So for reference, present-day D&D, and which Baldur's Gate 3 takes place in, is the year 1492 DR, Dale Reckoning. So this is about 36,500 years in the past. So starting at 35,000 BC, this is the Days of Thunder, or otherwise known as Days of the Creator Races. There were five legendary creator races native to Toril. At this point, I'm just going to straight up read from the wiki because I can't really give another better summarized version of what's pertinent information. Also, I would highly suggest looking up a picture of what these things look like if you are unfamiliar with them, because me trying to explain to you what they look like would not give you an accurate description at all. So, the first creator race is the Sauruk, the reptilian or sauroid creator race, and they ruled the Sauruk empires from 35,000 BC, and they are the creators of the Yuan Ti, Naga, lizard folk, and other serpent folk and scaly kind. Then we have the Batraki, the amphibioid creator race, rulers of the Batraki empires from 33,500 BC, and the creators of Bullywugs, Doppelgangers, Kuotua, and other amphibious, piscine, and shapeshifter races. By the way, I know I'm totally butchering a few of these names. Some of these have enunciations next to them in the wiki, and some don't. Just please feel free to butcher me in the comments or wherever you get a hold of me at. I like to consider myself fairly well-read, so please bash me when I screw up linguistically. Next, we have the Eri, the avian creator race, rulers of the Eri empires from 31,000 BC, and creators of the Arakakra, Kenku, and other avian humanoids. Then the Fae rulers of otherworldly realms of Faerie, from 34,000 BC, creators of Korids, Pixies, and Sprites. Then finally, for the fifth creator race, there is this ape-like, cave-dwelling, simple tool-using race that evolves into, you guessed it, humans. Which, there's actually quite a lot of controversy about why they are the fifth creator race instead of dragons. A lot of people say dragons should be. I don't understand why they're the creator race if they're still evolving into a race themselves. And after kind of reading a whole bunch about it, and after you get done listening to this episode, you'll probably be scratching your head as well and wondering why dragons are not the fifth creator race and instead a still evolving primate. Yeah. So moving on from that, we are now in the time of the Saruk, which is from 35,000 BC to 33,500 BC. Then at 33,500 BC is the time of the Batraki. And the time of the Batraki was very short-lived as well, because they were fighting Titans in the height of their power in 31,500 BC. Titans were the largest and most intelligent of all the giant races. 500 years pass, and the Batraki were getting destroyed in the war and did a desperate summoning ritual that released a few of the imprisoned primordials. This did not make the gods very happy at all. They acted quickly and with force and disposed of the primordials. However, before the gods got involved and defeated the primordials were actually able to help the Batraki defeat the Titans. So this is where one of those contradicting things I said comes up, because at this point it also says Io, Asgrath, the god of dragons that got killed and made Tiamat and Bahamut, was one of the primordials that was released from imprisonment to help the Batraki. Also, there's a lot of things that say Io is very in comparison to Ao and is just as powerful, so I really don't understand how he could be killed by a primordial in the first place. I don't know if it's because Asgarath is such a powerful god that when he dies, he doesn't really die. I don't know. If you understand this, please reach out to me and explain it to me, and I can gain some clarity and relay that in a future episode, because either I or the wiki is missing something. But moving on from that confusion, one of the primordials that got released hurled a comet at Toril, completely devastating it. It was Asgarath. This comet hitting Toril created powerful earthquakes, fires, windstorms, etc. across the entire planet. Tsunami is so big that it rearranged the oceans. This is what formed the Sea of Fallen Stars as it is known today, and where it gets its name. This event is called Tearfall. Due to this catastrophe, Ao, the Overgod, Almighty, made a copy of Toril so the primordials would stop coveting the world and they would have their own that they could rule over. This world is called Abir, and is used in unison with Toril in realm space, but is out of synchronicity, which to me means it's there, but on a different wavelength, so to speak. It has a steel-colored sky due to residual essence left behind by a dead primordial. It also has completely different geography, but somehow is completely the same planet. So, same, but different. All over the wiki, it is described as Abir Toril. So they are always used together almost everywhere, so they are very much looked at as the same planet, even though they aren't. So almost all of the primordials decide to go over to Abir. During this time, there is also the planting of dragon eggs in the tens of thousands all across Toril. It is unclear whether the eggs were in the comet Asgarath threw at the planet, or if they came by a long storm of meteors. But either way, it is agreed that it was Asgarath's doing. These disasters led to the end of the time of the Batraki, along with their empire and civilization on Toril. Many of them died or left the plane in general, heading to a plane called Limbo, which is the chaotic neutral plane. Not really sure why they left chaos to go to literally a plane of chaos. It seems like a questionable decision at best, but they founded their own realm there called Supreme Throne, so it must have worked out for them. After the Batrachi were gone and things settled on Toril, this led to the time of the Eri, which is the avian creator race. This was once again not very long lasted, though, as they got into a nasty war with the Gnolls, who in turn poisoned their crops, and the Eri suffered through a plague that decimated their populace. It didn't completely destroy their empire, but it was pretty close. They then began worshipping the demon lord Pazuzu for salvation. This now ends the Days of Thunder, which begins the Dawn Age at 400 years later at 30,000 BC. This age is also known as the Dawn of Dragons and Dawn of Giants. At the beginning of the age, the dragons start mass spreading across the world. They made an official gathering that is now called the First Flight of the Dragons to go after and fully finish off the Eri Empire. Note that none of the dragons here are fully mature yet. Dragons take a few hundred years to fully mature, and honestly, it's closer to 400 to 500, I believe. So right now, they're just a bunch of angsty adolescent dragons that took down the world's empire at the spur of a moment. After the dragon attack, all that remained of the Eri race then fled to what is now known as Ancarome. Ancarome, which is an island nation northwest of the Sword Coast across the Trackless Sea, eventually became the origin nation of the Arakocra. So the Eri race ended up evolving into the Arakocra, which is the modern and most prominent human bird race. Around this time, the god of the giants, Anam Allfather, marries a demigod, Othea, and produces 8 children. They go off and create 6 different giant realms or kingdoms on Toril. 500 years pass, and some of the dragons are reaching maturity. The giants, which have flourished in the last 5 centuries, felt a little threatened by the cunning, powerful, and intelligent creatures, and they wanted to put a stop to them existing. Soon, all war breaks out between the giants and the dragons. During this little feud of giants and dragons, the dragons themselves are having civil wars as well. Not just normal civil wars, the best type of civil wars. Religious civil wars. It started when there was a debate of what Asgarath, the god of dragons, alignment and nature was. The Draco-Holy Wars then progressed into the Dragonfall War, where followers of Bahamut, the good dragon, and Tiamat, the evil dragon, fight over a battle of good and evil, which is still being fought today. Tiamat ended up creating Dragonspawn due to this war. Dragonspawn include creatures like kobolds and urds, but the full list is basically anything with an evil alignment that sound like it could fit into that category. Bahamut countered these creations himself by creating the Dragonborn race. Dragonborns were used as knights and warriors against Tiamat's forces. In the year 28,000 BC, the giants have reached the peak of their kingdom, and it stays that way for a few thousand years. Around 27,000 BC, the Fae opened up a planar gate, which is a sustained portal between planes, to allow the first elves to start inhabiting the world. They did this in an attempt to undermine the power and rule of the dragons of the realm. Also, side note here, the first elves were a lot stronger than the common race you are familiar with today. The Fae are creatures of the Feywild, and it is a very fairy-like plane. This plane is in parallel with the Prime Material Plane. In 26,000 BC, the battling and feuding between the giants and the dragons reaches a full-scale war when the Red Dragons were led into a siege against Astoria, the original kingdom of the giants. This began a 1,000-year war against the two races. Between this and the Draco-Holy War, the philosophers of the dragons decided that religious fighting was pointless and wasteful, and that the gods that allowed such events to take place were not worthy of their worship. This apathy against the dragon gods lasted thousands of years and led to some of the original draconic pantheons dying due to lack of worship. These pantheons are now forgotten and lost to time. In case you didn't know, being worshipped is how gods stay alive in D&D, and I know it's very common in many other IPs as well, but without worship you simply just fade away and perish. I believe that's the only way to truly kill a god. So the dragons are able to win the battles and push the giants out of the southern end of their kingdom. To combat and compete against the dragons, the giants forged a giant construct Constructs were their magical, mechanical suits of armor, more or less, that they could make as soldiers. This giant construct was 80 feet tall, 3 times taller than any other construct, and called Voninod, which means Titan of Death in Jotun, which is actually a very accurate name, as it killed a lot of dragons. An 80-foot tall magical juggernaut with adamantine armor and a great sword. It used to walk into full-on dragon dens and be the only thing walking out. It even slew more dragons than the great Hjörnir Wormreaver, who got his name by killing so many dragons single-handed. This giant killed an adult blue dragon with a single blow of his axe and broke the spine of a black dragon over his knee like Bane did to Batman. Very worthy of the name Wormreaver. And this giant construct, Vonendod, completely overshadowed him when it came to dragon slaying. I'm honestly not sure why they didn't make a few of these things if it was so good at killing. Maybe they ran out of adamantine? I couldn't really find an answer to that question, but they only had one, sadly. During the war, Othea, the mother of giants, was doing some running around while Allfather was protecting the homeland. One of those running rounds was with a demigod called Vaprak, the Destroyer. This affair created the Ogre race. 500 years later, shortly before the end of the Giant Dragon War, she had another affair with a demigod, Ulutiu, which resulted in various other giant kin races, including the Firbolgs. Amon Allfather was not happy with this, so he went off and killed Ulutiu. So Othea and history thought. Ulutiu agreed to a slumbering exile, and Amon put his body on a barge and floated it into the cold sea in the north. His body then sank, and the magic amulet he wore began to freeze the waters, creating the Great Glacier and the Endless Ice Sea, basically the North Pole and the Arctic Ocean. Othea was not happy he killed her suitor and refused to give him another child. Amon tricked her into getting pregnant, which is a really nice way to say marital rape. He took the form of divine wind and blew across her slopes, if you know what I mean. I'm not joking. I took that literally straight from the wiki. She apparently could take form of mountains and he could take form of winds, and that's all it took, I guess. Well, she knew immediately after what happened, because how could you not, you know? And ended up coming to an accord that she would keep the child if he left Toril. It is unclear and speculative on where he went during this time. The creeping ice from Ulutiu's amulet moved towards the capital of the giant kingdom, Voinheim. Lanaxis, Othea's son who founded Voinheim, wanted to go save it, but Othea forbid it, even with him knowing how to stop the ice. He gathered his siblings and went to go save it anyway, but one of them didn't want to. So Lanaxis decided to poison Othea and kinda overshot and got most of his siblings as well. Before her death, she cursed Lanaxis for his sins and that he would lose his immortality if he ever left her shadow. Not entirely sure what that means either, but that's what the wiki says. Following this, he and his siblings fled to Arborea, which is the chaotic good plane and now referred to as Olympus. Genuinely not sure if that counted as leaving her shadow, but that's what he did. When Othea died, her unborn son, Heartkiller, ended up surviving, but was stunted, only a mere 12 feet tall, and shunned by his other siblings. His entire purpose of being birthed was to restore the kingdom of the giants, Astoria, to its former glory, and he was attempting to do as such. But his siblings didn't think he could or should fulfill the destiny because of how tiny he was. Well, our short King Heartkiller sought out help from the humans instead. The humans decided to help in return for protection from the other giants. The giant kin races, sons of Ulutiu and Othea, all took Heartkiller's side, and this began the War of the Heart, and started a kingdom called Heartsvale, which still stands in modern Faerun. Heartkiller died at the end of the War of the Heart in a battle with the storm giant Paramount, which was said to have lasted more than 100 days. In 25,100 BC, elf survivors in the fairy realm kingdom of Tintagir summoned the power of high elvish magic and escaped to Toril and found the first elven nation on Faerun. The previous elves that were on Faerun were more nomadic and living in clans instead of large societies and kingdoms. These elves defeat the great red worm Mahat Nartorian, master of the mountains. In 25,000 BC, the giant nation came to a truce with the dragons. The nation borders had been pushed back up to the northernmost part of Faerun, which is now mostly covered in ice as well. A little side note, around this time is the last murmurings of when Ironfang Keep has been mentioned. For those of you that don't know or maybe aren't familiar with the name, I was one. Ironfang Keep is an extremely ancient, extremely large fortress in the Earthspur Mountains. It was created by fire giants during the Thousand Year War and was the only one of 12 to stay standing at the end of it. Notes to how well it was built and how near indestructible it was that it lasted through 1,000 years of ancient dragons trying to destroy it and then ended up lasting another 25,000 years as well. Around this same time, the High Mages of the Elves created a mithril, which is basically an extremely powerful magical object. This mithril was made to activate whenever a comet would pass through the sky, and its effect would make dragons go crazy. All dragons and dragon-blooded creatures would see this comet and then gain an uncontrollable bloodlust whenever it was in view. They would basically get more and more agitated until they were nothing more than raging beasts. Dragons in this stage would attack anything and everything, including their own kin. This would happen quite frequently over the next few centuries, severely damaging the dragon's prowess on Toril due to the dragon-on-dragon crime. Around 24,500 BC, more dragon spawn began appearing. The kobolds at this point found Garl Glittergolds, a god of the gnomes, gem caves. These gem caves were full of souls that Garl used to create the gnome race. Kobolds started mining and hoarding these gems, along with enslaving what gnomes were already alive at the point. Dragons consumed by the rage so many times, they ended up destroying their own kingdom, Darastravertica. Garl Glittergold ended up taking advantage of the dragon-on-dragon crime and went and saved the souls of the gnomes. He ended up collapsing the mountain above the caverns where the kobolds dwelled in, killing all of them and creating what is now known as the Hidden Lake. At 24,000 BC, great worms attacked the Yuan Ti, cobra, snake race, kingdoms to the south and defeated them, which was an end to their reign in the region as well. The dragons are desperately trying to destroy the Draco Rage mithril. The Avarials, basically winged elves, sacrificed their lives to fend off the dragons and protect the magical artifact. Being a flimsy race, hollow bones, they almost became extinct due to this battle, but survived. With the Draco Rage mithril surviving, and their kingdom being in ruins, this ends the time of the dragons. This also ends the Dawn Age, as well as this episode. Thank you guys so much for making it this far. I kinda bit off more than I could chew with this D&D stuff, and it'll take a while to get through, so I think I'm gonna just sprinkle it around other episodes. So please, stay tuned for more. I also forgot to plug the book that I'm reading for this one. It's called The Fallbacks. It's a fairly newer book, I believe. It doesn't have anything to do with any origination of the realms or Toril, but it is a fantastic book. Almost done with it, absolutely loving it so far. I'm actually doing the audiobooks. I do everything in audiobooks, and the audio acting is great. Huge plug. Also, don't forget to follow me and reach out to me on all my socials. Tell me how I'm doing. Voice your complaints, corrections, or otherwise. I am on Twitch, Instagram, Reddit, the website formerly known as Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, kinda, all at Vitiligo. That's V-I-T-I-L-A-G-O. V-I-T-I-L-A-G-O. Stay awesome, everybody. And as always, good luck and Godspeed. tiny monkey brain